Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Brody. Got quite a lot of topics and had a lot of topics just kind of thrown on us today, too.
It's unbelievable. You know, I thought for a second we might have had the grip lock curse where, you know, you go on the show and then all of a sudden breaking news happens the next day. But luckily, it broke prior to that. We're going to jump into all sorts of different topics. And all, as always, we will take your guys' calls, which last episode, that was probably the spiciest it's gotten.
Yeah, it probably was. And I definitely think so.
I'm a little sad right now because I was excited for the possibility of getting Silas back in here, get him on potentially with a mic and a camera so you guys can see him if you're watching this on YouTube. And we were going to Julius Caesar. We were going to go old school Julius Caesar on the calls because in the chat, they are very, during this live on YouTube here, they are very active with what should be continued mm-hmm. and what should be ended. And so, unfortunately, Silas isn't here for that. So we're just going to have to do it ourselves.
Yeah. And that also means that we're producing the show ourselves. So again, if you're in the chat, if you're listening on audio, give us a little bit of leeway, give us some feedback. If you're in the chat live, if you're listening in the audio, just trust that at some point during the show, we'll fix whatever ends up going wrong because inevitably something will go wrong.
That's just what happens with live. I have good feelings about tonight. So, So Julius Caesar, so, you know, I'll be looking in the chat a little bit when we're on phone calls. And, you know, if you see my thumb go up, that's basically,
means you're on the line.
It means, well, I guess it won't go up. It'll go here.
It starts in the middle. And if it's like, okay, that's a good question.
Yeah.
If
someone comes on and says, hey, I want to talk about live versus post, like you're probably getting over. Straight down. We're just going to hang up. So, yeah. Tonight, I'm going to forewarn people, if you do call in tonight, you might get hung up.
We'll need to re-remind them when the live call-in's about to happen.
That's true, because there's more people.
Yeah. Okay. So that no one gets butthurt thinking that they just got hung up on for no reason.
I have no mercy. We do want to show you guys real quick the polos. We got some polos dropping.
Yeah, they might have seen these teased in a few different areas, but very limited first run here dropping tomorrow. The Foundation Mountain Polo, collarless polo. So it's got two buttons on the front. I believe it's technically called a blade polo, but full Foundation branding, even on the tag. Pretty proud of this. And then Foundation Disc Golf on the back.
I wore this during my third round during the Battle for Bedford. And I have to tell you guys, one of my favorite polos.
Yeah, I'm going to be rocking this at USDGC quite a bit next week. Not as a player. I will be on the sidelines. But yeah, it's got a decent, very decent bit of give to it. Mm-hmm. So it
absorbed the moisture well. I sweat a lot when I play, so
it's got a great like dry fit feel to it. I really like it.
So you need to check that out. That'll be on foundationdisc.com.
Yeah, and depending on how popular this run is, we might bring them back. We do have another design coming in that's going to be here a little bit later, but pretty excited for that release. And then as always, we got the fall line coming. Pretty soon.
A lot of stuff in the pipes, man. A lot of stuff. That's not what people say. What do people say?
A lot of stuff coming down the pipe.
Coming down the pipe. So technically it is in the pipes.
It is in the pipes, but it is now moving down.
Now it is moving down
towards the pipes. Being released. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the national tour situation. I think this was something that we all knew was, I don't even want to try to say this word. It's one of the hardest words to say. Inevitable. Ooh.
Yeah, that was
a one hit wonder.
Inevitable is not a hard word to
say.
No,
it is for me. It is for me.
Okay.
I think we all knew this was eventually going to happen.
Yes, it was definitely coming down the pipe.
I do think, though, however, that this announcement, I would say two things. The announcement was way sooner than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like if it was going to happen, I would have thought the announcement would have occurred once the season was over. And then also, I would say I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought we were going to have one more year of where it was like a slow phase out process.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean, I think with a lot of the backlash from players, from spectators, from fans watching at home, I think the PDGA finally said, hey, we need to take a step back. We can't run the pro level tournaments as well as the Disc Golf Pro Tour. We need to give our reins over. And now it looks like they're turning into potentially like a rules kind of organization that is working with the Disc Golf Pro Tour, if I'm correct, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that side, you're correct. But I read the article. I also read or listen to
the video.
Nate Heinold on the Nick and Matt show. Nice. They did like a pop-up interview with him. Mm-hmm. He's apparently, he has replaced the jerk move guy. The one who will not be mentioned is now Nate Heinold has taken
that
place.
That guy was already kind of...
Yeah, he had said that he was one foot out the door. Yeah. So that wasn't a surprise, but Nate Heinold has taken over as that position. But Nate Heinold and the PDGA article and the PDGA has been doubling down that this has nothing to do with player feedback at all. They're saying that player feedback, they're like, the players really didn't have...
That's a PDGA stance.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Nothing bad's happening.
They're just doubling down that, like, the complaints basically... Because their whole stance is, with the tour standard for the National Tour, we met. The Pro Tour continuously exceeded. We've been wanting to be able to pass this along, and this was the year to do so. I will say, I think the reason that this announcement happened now is I believe that now that the National Tour Pro Tour season's over, the schedule is supposed to come out around Friday or Saturday. So they had to make the announcement soon, because once the schedule comes out, it wasn't really going to be an announcement. I think that's kind of why. Now, why they're posting the schedule now versus after USDGC and the Pro Tour finale, I don't know. But that's kind of was the reasoning behind it that I had heard.
What's the situation with Worlds? Are they still running Worlds?
PDGA still will control the majors minus USDGC because Innova owns that, you know.
Yeah.
What the PDGA ends up doing with that, who knows. But the PDGA will still own the majors. They'll still be the sanctioning body. So they'll still be the ones kind of behind all the sanctioning, all of that. It looked like within this deal, there was also some additional membership feedback, which we'll go into more detail on Griplocked tomorrow. But it looked like some, just for being a PGA member, you'll get a little more access to Disc Golf Network content, stuff like that. That makes it a little bit more beneficial to a PGA member. But I think this will be an interesting question for you, because I've been in the sport years. I've been a PGA member for years. Mm-hmm. This is your first full year being a PGA member. Mm-hmm. Where does your money go as a PGA member? What would you think are some things happening because of your money?
I mean, it's the same thing I dealt with Ultimate too. Like Ultimate, you had to pay $35 or $45 to be a USA Ultimate member to be able to play in these tournaments. It's tough to say exactly where that money goes. You know, you always hear like, oh, the numbers are there. You can look into the financials and stuff. I know you guys, I don't want to spoil it. I know you guys are going to, in Griplock, dig in a little bit more on these purses, just magically, like money's just magically showing up. Which again, people at home might be like, don't ever be upset. Why are you upset that more money's in the purse? That's not our stance. Our stance is not, we're upset that more money's in the purse.
It's more, why wasn't
it there in the first place? So I know you guys are going to dig into that deeper.
But actually want to at some point do, and it's probably going to be an off season, a full like sit down with an accountant, full PDGA audit. That.
I don't want to talk during it at all. I just want to listen.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is very rare, by the way.
We want to do a full PDGA. But that's what I'm saying is, I think that, because a lot of people I saw on social media were basically saying like the PDGA is gone. Because what they thought of the PDGA was the National Tour. And then other people think of the PDGA as a rating. Other people think of the PDGA, like for me, as the sanctioning body, the rules body, and the people who also, you know, if you don't have insurance for your event, you can also use their insurance, stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff the PDGA does behind the scenes. But they obviously do more than that as far as the growth of the sport and stuff like that goes. I just think that as of right now, it's not being marketed very well, so that a newer player
has no idea.
Why would I pay $50 a year or $75 a year to be a PDGA member? What are my tangible benefits? Or like, even if it's not tangible, what is my money going into to further the growth of the sport? Where is that money going? That money is going places, and there's only two reasons not to share it. Either A, it's a bad marketing play, like you just are messing up, which I think that's more so what it is, or B, you don't want people to truly know where the money's going. I don't think that's necessarily it, but who knows, maybe that is, because they do post their 501c3, they have to, the full audit at the end of every year. So you can kind of look in a little bit more, but some of it's in somewhat obscure places.
I would love to see what an accountant looks like at it and just get a better idea. And again, like, you know, if I go and I pull up their numbers, I'm not an accountant. I don't really know what I'm looking at.
Exactly.
So I think that would be an awesome episode to kind of break in and really like have people have a good idea. Like almost like, what is it? Hooked on Phonics?
Well, I think it's an important thing for people to know. Yeah. I think it's an important thing for people to know when I pay the PDGA, where is it going beyond the benefits directly to me?
Yeah.
Because I think that'll help people, and that would help the PDGA to see, like, membership wise, if people knew I'm paying $50, sure, I might only play three tournaments, so I could have just paid the 30 non-PDGA fees. Sure, I get a rating, I get all these stuff to me, but now my money is also going into these programs, X, Y, and Z, that's helping grow the sport
and
its
more
tangible
youth players
results.
Playing and exactly. Stuff. Yeah.
Stuff like that is going on. It's just that we as members a lot of times never hear about it unless you go and read every article on the PDGA website. And so stuff like that can be tough to where when the year comes back around, people are like, why am I paying money to the PDGA? And it's like, there's things that are happening that are very good that the PDGA should have been focused on this whole time. But stuff like the national tour and stuff like that were clouding the promotional side of the PDGA to where we couldn't actually see what's going on behind the curtain. And I think that if it's good stuff, it'll be a good thing for the PDGA. That's off their plate. And they can show it. If it's bad stuff, it'll be a good thing for us as the players because now we'll be able to hold them accountable.
Once you can actually say, hey, look what's going on here.
Yeah, so. And that was the other thing that I think the PDGA has like doubled down on, which again, we'll talk about this more on Grip Locked, is it just is in my mind, I lost it. Oh, they're basically being like, oh, well, of course the Pro Tour can do it better. That's not all we're focused on, the National Tour. And I'm like, well, if the National Tour was the like a elite level tour that you're tying your name to, then you should have had 20 people focused on it year round. They're like, yeah, well, the Pro Tour has 30 people focused on just the Pro Tour. Like, of course they're putting out a good product. I'm like, I don't like the doubling down. I don't like the just, we're not wrong, we're going to double down.
It's the reason why Five Guys doesn't do milkshakes.
Because they only do what they're good at.
Yeah, because they know that they make really good burgers and really good fries, and if they make milkshakes, they have to make really good milkshakes, and they don't know if they can pull that off.
Yeah, so, like I said, again, we'll talk about...
I don't
about,
know if that was a good analogy, but I love Fry
we'll talk
Guys.
About it. You bring Five Guys.
Fry Guys? Time. Five Guys? Five Guys.
Yeah, but I definitely think this is something we'll talk about more on Grip Locks. I think it's a more of a...
Can I have
it's less of a debate.
Five Guys?
You probably can. It's less can of a I? Debate topic and more of just a let's talk through and see what's going on.
Well,
topic.
You know what? Let's debate this. I don't know if we're going to disagree. We might actually disagree on one of these divisions. We, if you guys were living under a rock, the Ryder Cup just happened. Go USA. I do believe we do not have a lot of European listeners. If I remember from the looking at the demo, you can.
Oh, whoa. Pause everything. Five Guys has milkshakes.
What?
So your whole analogy that you've used, who knows how many times?
No. How do you know that? Just because some person said
I've got multiple people in the chat. You've used this analogy against me so many times that Five Guys doesn't do milkshakes.
They
and now
didn't.
I'm getting so many people telling me Five Guys is doing milkshakes.
I haven't had Five Guys in a couple years, to be fair, but they didn't have milkshakes.
I'm just Googling it. This is very important stuff.
You
use this against me all the time.
Well, I went into a Five Guys and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I would spend like an extra $5, $4 here every time I come here
if
you guys had milkshakes. And they're like, we don't want to do milkshakes because we do fries and burgers really good and we don't want to like risk having a terrible product.
Now, in my defense, I won't know because I'm allergic to everything on the Five Guys menu because I can't have red meat.
But everyone's saying they have milkshakes and they're delicious. So
right
let's freaking go.
Hand-spun vanilla milkshakes.
I live under a rock.
Hand-spun vanilla milkshakes this is from their website, with or without whipped cream.
Do they have strawberry?
Choose many of our free mix-ins.
Oh, boy.
Bacon, bananas, strawberries, chocolate, malted milk, man. Oreo cookie pieces, peanut butter, salted caramel, or vanilla.
Oh. Where's the nearest Five Guys?
Ward Road, 15 minutes away.
All right, we're going there tomorrow.
10 minutes
My
away.
My gosh.
Right next to Blaze.
Well, I just want to say I apologize for everything I've ever said.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of times you've used that analogy to try to prove me wrong, and now I've been right this whole time.
I feel like it's only been once.
It's been at least two or three times, but keep going. Back to Ryder Cup.
I love Five Guys.
Not really that important. Ryder Cup.
So Ryder Cup, USA dominated. It was phenomenal performance by USA. I kind of had a feeling going into it that was probably what was going to happen. They lost the previous Ryder Cup in Europe badly. And the Ryder Cup's a really, really interesting tournament. Because it goes back and forth every 2 years, and the following two, the next Ryder Cup will be held in Europe, and they get to pick the course, and they also get to kind of set up the course. So in disc golf, that would be fascinating because let's just say you have your European team can't really throw that far, but they're really, really good in the woods. You're going to make, when it comes over there, you're going to make a really hard wooded course for all of our American bombers that come over and really struggle. That's basically what happened in golf. So the question is, if disc golf had their Ryder Cup, which I know
the President's Cup.
I know people say that, but that's not really because that's like mixed. That's like men and women playing together, right?
There's two FPO players on.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about straight men versus men, Ryder Cup, USA versus Europe, and women versus women, USA versus Europe.
Okay.
So two basically Ryder Cups, an FPO division and an MPO, however you want to, how you want to say it. So let's talk about the women first, and just kind of, I just pulled up the world rankings, and right now the women have the number one and number two players in the world on Europe with Kristin Tatar and Evelina, respectively. And then you've got three and four, Paige Pierce and Haley King. I think, and we're, for FPO, I think we agreed to have four players.
Yes.
Right?
Four. We'd said four FPO and eight MPO.
Okay. So right now, I think we both agree that all four of those are on the team.
Yes.
Okay. And then after that, you have Hinna. I think she's for sure on Europe. I think those three.
She's on my European team.
Yeah. I think those are three are locked. And then for the women, it gets interesting because you have Kat, Holcomb, Missy all right there. And I think there is a little bit of a drop off probably after that. But like, I feel like with match play, putting is going to be so crucial. And so like if Kat is putting well, I think she's in it for sure. And then you have Holcomb versus Gannon, and I think Gannon might get the nudge there.
I was going to say, here's my four on both sides.
All right. Because the fourth one for European in the top 10 would be Heidi. Heidi Lane.
Yeah. So Europe, yeah. I'm just taking her top four. Kristin Tatar, Evelina Salonen, Hinna Blomroos, and Heidi Lane.
Yep.
I'll explain why that was such a neat decision here in a second.
Well, I don't think you need to because I agree with you.
USA, so I'm going Paige,
yep.
Haley.
Yep.
I am going Kat.
Okay.
And then I'm going Missy.
Okay.
Valerie Mandahano, I would bring as an alternate and just look at the course.
Dark horse, but okay.
But I wouldn't.
We're not really doing alternate.
Okay, we're not doing alternate. Okay, then I'm locking in Missy.
Okay. I think I would agree with you, actually. Okay. I think I'd pick the same. And I'm going to go ahead and say, should we say who we think would win?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to explain, my European team.
But do you know the situation, how it's going to break down?
No, you can walk that. Okay. Walk me through that. So, I don't think it's going to change my decision making, but walk me through it.
So basically what they would do is it might be weird with only four, but essentially you would have foursomes is what they call them. And so it's basically alternate shot. So you go alternate shot. And so the first day you would have two matches, or you'd have four matches, two in the morning, two in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Second day, same thing, two in the morning, two in the afternoon. And then the final day you'd go singles. So there'd be four matches as well. Well, there'd be two matches, two, four. So it'd be eight matches total.
Okay. Sticking with what I was going to say.
The phenomenal thing though, another thing, which would be really fun, is they don't like me. If I'm the captain of the European team, we alternate, and you're the captain of the European U.S. team. We alternate who like gets to select the team for as far as pairings go. So I'll say first group off is going to be Kristin and Hinna, and you've already decided who your first person is, and so we match up that way. So that's kind of fun because you don't really like get to know who's going against who. Does that make sense? Maybe not. That might have gone way over your head. Regardless, who do you got?
I came in just thinking.
Who do you got?
I got Europe because my whole reason is it didn't matter. I didn't know Heidi Lane was even in the top 10 mm-hmm. women in the world right now.
You didn't
that
even
solidifies it because all I was thinking is that the three, if you put Kristin, Evelina, and Hinna on the same team
yeah.
right now.
They're winning their singles match every time?
Yeah, I think that no one's touching them right now.
Okay, and then they just need to pick up a couple foursome matches and they win.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, with what we've seen on the American side, right? Because I don't really watch too much European disc golf.
It's hard to watch right now.
It's difficult
because you'd have to go searching for it a lot more than the Pro Tour,
the Disc Golf Network. But yeah. From what I've seen with when Kristin came over and how she just, you know, she was just starting to kind of get into the flow and the rhythm of things.
Yeah, and she's right now, well, I guess she is right now the number one in the world, but Evelina's given her a run for her money multiple times, yeah. And Hinna. Not to say that tough. Paige and Haley won't.
No.
But
if you're a betting man, I think you got to go Europe every time.
Right now, yeah, I would agree. So, I agree.
But that would be, I mean, gosh, that would be, let's just talk about how phenomenal that would be if we watched that.
So NPO, we're going eight both sides.
This is tough because I just opened up the top 10. You're not going to find a European player. And again, this is where it's kind of funky junky, right? Is because a part of me is like, well, of course you're not going to have European people in the top because they're playing over here. And I don't really know how the world rankings
factors all that in
because you're playing a different pool versus the Americans playing over here. But clearly, it didn't stop the European.
It's pretty
women.
Accurate on the FPO side.
It didn't stop the European. Yeah. So you have to think that it has to be somewhat accurate for
exactly.
For NPO,
that's what I was about to say. Is it?
Right?
It's relatively accurate for FPO from what we've seen. So like it's got to be relatively accurate for NPO.
Paige and Haley are 1 and 2, and Kristen and Evelina were 3 and 4. Then we'd be like, okay, there's something weird going on here. Maybe it's just a point situation. But looking at this, I mean, if you literally just took the top 8 guys, which I don't think I actually would, I think I would slip down a little bit, but I would take for sure Ricky, for sure Eagle, for sure Paul, Heimberg, Dickerson, Hammies, and then from here after this 6, I think your next 2, you can go a lot of different ways. I think Nate Sexton is a great pick, all the way at number 12. Again, this is a team sport. A team competition, the situation. I think Nate would have great leadership for the team. He's obviously a phenomenal player. I think someone like a James Conrad could fit in that role, or Kale LaVisca could fit in that role. And then if you wanted to go, you know, a little bit more on like the skill wise, as someone that might, you know, be able to really dominate and overpower some courses, you can look at Drew Gibson fitting in that spot, a Kevin Jones. I mean, this is where I think it gets real, real interesting. And this is why I also think when they do the Ryder Cup, they have it to where you can qualify points wise, right, throughout the season. And then the captain gets, I don't know, I think there was 12 players. So I think 8 players qualify, and then the captain gets 4 players. So in this scenario, it'd probably be 6 players qualify.
That's I think that's similar to how the President's Cup was.
Okay.
They did like, I forget how many people were on the team, but I believe the captain of the USA and Europe got to pick like 2 or 3 men and 1 of the women.
Yeah.
And the others were based on, I don't even know, points maybe? Maybe it was like points series leader. So
I don't even think if we even need to talk about this. I honestly think, I'll just say it, I think if you took the American B team, I think that would actually be pretty competitive with Europe's top players right now.
I disagree.
That might ruffle up some feathers, if
Here's
you will.
What I say. You have to remember Simon is going to be on Team Europe.
Okay.
Vino Mikkela.
Yeah.
Seppo Paju.
He's not in the next name. He's 2 down. You've got Lauri Lintinen and Nicholas Antille.
See, Nicholas just won the Finnish championship. Mm-hmm. A lot of these players who are above Simon, probably in the world rankings, slapped Simon around when he went over there.
Oh, Albert
Tam's another one.
Tom.
I think if you get them on the right course, it's a lot more competitive than you might think, because there's a lot of European players that are...
Oh, it's 8 and 4. Okay, I was right. Yep,
a lot of European players are very young and absolute killers right now. We're talking like 20 or younger and...
I
are capable of being top 20 players in the NPO field over
I think
here.
If it was in 2 years,
yeah,
I think it's a completely different story. Sure, I think if it was right now, I think American almost has a chance.
Okay,
of
so
sweeping.
Let's just focus on, obviously, we haven't seen enough Europe players to be able to name the top 8 Europeans confidently. Mm-hmm. I think we would do it injustice to try to do that right now. Mm-hmm. I am excited. I think there's a few Europeans that were able to come over and qualify for USDGC. Pretty excited to watch them play. But let's just look at top 8 USA. You're taking Team USA. Who is your 8?
I would
lock them in.
Yeah, I would probably go with who I was talking about earlier, the top 6 guys.
Well, you got to 6, and then when you got to 7 and 8, you started rambling.
So I think, I was just saying there's a lot of options.
Yeah, I want you to lock in 7 and 8.
I'm saying there's a lot of options. So I would probably go. I would probably go with my 7th pick. I'd probably go with. You know, I'm going to go Nate Sexton, Drew Gibson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to look at world rankings.
And I'm taking KJ as an alternate.
You told me no alternates. I'm not looking at the world rankings. I'm going to just try to go off my head here. So I'm going Ricky, Paul, Calvin, Eagle.
Yeah.
I think I would get Adam Hammes in there for sure.
Yep.
Did I miss someone?
Dickerson. You're not taking Dickerson.
I put Dickerson in there. I'm trying to think through my iffy ones.
He's not an iffy one. He's not an iffy one. He can play all different. He can play every course. You gotta.
Dickerson's my six. He's in there.
Yeah.
Let's calm down.
Do you want to give you a couple names?
No.
Okay. All right.
I am going Kevin Jones. Okay. Locking him in there because I think Kevin Jones in a match play situation is different than in a stroke play tournament situation.
Didn't he get knocked down in the first round of match play?
Let's not look at that match play tournament. Okay. There was a lot of weird stuff going on.
But didn't he?
Probably. I think I picked him to go far.
I think he got knocked out.
I think it is tough. This is really tough. I think I'm going to go with Kyle Klein.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because Kyle Klein, I think, is a similar player to Eagle that they're going to be able to play a lot of courses. And I also think he's got some clutch gene to him.
I think the lowest world ranked guy I would go is Nico, just because I think he would be an absolute animal in a match play situation. Well, like in a USA versus Europe situation.
What is James Conrad's world ranking right now?
He is 15.
15.
He dropped three spots.
Okay.
Yeah. Mason Ford went up 30 spots after winning. Yeah. Dang, he was 41 and went up.
Well, he beat a 11. pretty solid field. Well, so his dominance index jumped a lot.
Well, let's talk about the dominance index. All right.
I don't understand the math behind it.
No one does.
Or else I would. No, people do. Smart people do. I'm not one of those.
So let's jump into the next topic. We got Paul and Paige. A lot of people are saying, what the heck is going on? And to answer the question bluntly, I don't think really anything's going on. I think the easiest way to say it is the field is getting deeper and the people that are winning these tournaments are playing almost flawless disc golf, where in the past you were able to potentially show up and not have your best stuff and still win. That is no longer the case. And, you know, watching Paul and watching Paige, I mean, obviously Paul is going a little bit through his putting stroke right now, and that's changing, but it's like on paper, it's hard to really say they're like getting worse. I think it's at the point where you have to play so good to win these tournaments, and it's only going to get harder.
Well, I think it's a mixture. So I agree with you more so on the Paige side than the Paul side, just because I think that in the past, Paige on the FPO side, it's almost where I always look at FPO as it's basically competition and stuff wise at the highest level is almost like where MPO was 8 to 10 years ago, competition wise. Because if you rewind back, it's basically Paul and Rick battling it out, and then the field starts to get deeper. And then
FPO is going to get FPO, even crazier. Because the amount of people that are bouncing around FPO right now is nuts, but it's only like eight people.
Mm-hmm.
Where pretty soon it's going to be like 16.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is last year before, it's Paige and Kat. You had Valerie Jenkins sneaking in there, Sarah Holcomb sneaking in there. You had some players
for specific courses, Yeah,
but week in week out, Paige Kat.
Yeah.
This year, you start having Kona sneak in there, Missy Gannon sneak in there,
Haley,
Katrina Allen, and Paige are in there.
Kristen
Tatar, Haley King's in there.
Over.
Kristen Tatar, yeah. Sarah Holcomb. So I think I agree with you more so on the FPO side of like Paige.
But if you're watching Paige, you're not thinking like, oh my God, she's gotten so bad.
No, some tournaments she'll play worse than normal, but there have been tournaments where she's played very well and what used to be good enough to win and has still lost.
I think there's
Paul's
also...
side, I disagree.
Okay, to kind of real quick add on to the Paige thing, there is a huge, huge difference between playing in a tournament and not having your best stuff or not playing that great and still winning, like still being in the lead by a couple shots, where I think when we have seen Paige quote unquote not play well, a lot of that is because she's down after the first round, 4 or 5, and she knows she has to try to get those strokes back. So she's going for more shots than she normally would, probably playing a little bit more aggressive. And when you're not on, now you all of a sudden you're, you know, it's the whole mindset of like you go into a hole and you're playing it for par, you're probably not going to take a 7.
Yeah.
But if you go into a hole and you're trying to birdie it, you have the potential of blowing up if you throw your first shot OB or whatever. So I think we're seeing a lot of that with Paige, of where in years past, potentially, she just was kind of not coasting, but she had the lead and never gave it up. Where we've seen multiple tournaments this year where she's down 4 or 5 after the first round. And you have to play probably differently to make up that ground.
Yeah. And
a little bit same with Paul.
On the Paul side, though, I will say this year he has been, like, if you watch him play, he has been playing worse than he has in years past. If you watch him play. When he's been
isn't he leading the tour in strokes gained off the tee?
Maybe, but his biggest thing has always been putting, and his putt's been struggling year round. That's why we even recently saw him change it.
This is where I think
I haven't seen Paul change his putt in like 6 years. This is where
I think stats come in huge, because now we can kind of just see a little bit of, yeah. So fairway hits, he's second right now. Circle two putts, he's fourth. And I think this is the stat you're talking about. Circle one X, he's 32nd.
Yeah, Paul has historically been first or second.
Yeah.
Maybe third. And we've seen him just not feel comfortable.
But
so
like all these stats are real. I mean, literally he's
throwing the disc good and everything, but you have to remember.
Circle one in regulation, second. He's second.
Season wise, he's having a good season.
Yeah.
He's just not having a good season for Paul. You have to put that in perspective. And I think the whole reason is the Circle 1X putting, which he has addressed and talked about multiple times. But all I'm saying is you can't look at Paul's season this year and say he's playing as good as he previously has.
Well, I mean,
and I agree with you that he could play out of his mind this season and he wouldn't dominate like he had in the past.
But we don't have the stats in front of us to show.
You're looking at it right there. 36th place, Circle 1X.
Case closed. Well, hold on. What I'm saying is we don't have the stats in front of us to go back and look at.
Because again,
32nd, for example, could be inflated, right? Because there's more people touring now than maybe 5 years ago.
What's his percentage?
83.
Yeah, that's awful. He was most tournaments. A bad tournament for Paul in years past was like 87-90. There was many tournaments where he finished 100% C1X. He was him and Ricky basically co-held the title as greatest putter in the world.
Yeah.
This year you can't argue that right now.
Yeah.
It was always an argument. So he's just not playing as good.
Not putting.
He's not putting as good. But you can obviously the field strength factors into it a little bit. You know, stuff like that. But with Paul, I think you can't as much argue that like it's 100% field strength and not him playing up to his skill and still losing. I think if he plays up to his skill, he's not dominating like he has in the past, but he would be able to have like a Ricky or Eagle type season.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where 3 or 4 Elite Series win type season, which I think is equivalent to what he used to be doing, which was, you know, 7, 8, however many there was.
The thing is, though, is like you're going to have slumps. Like in every sport, players go through slumps. And, you know, Paul, obviously, like you said, his putting isn't where it is. He's going through a little bit of a slump this year. He's still performing well. He's still having good finishes. But I think when you are in that separate category from everyone else, where everyone's expecting you to win every tournament you enter, and I think Paul and Paige both have that. When you are in a slump, people are like, what's wrong? Like, there has to be something wrong.
Well, I think that's a different issue.
I'm going through the motions. Like, there has to be a reason. Like, are they not practicing enough? Do they not eat enough good food? Are they not working out?
Paul right now just looks uncomfortable.
Are they not focused? Are they, you know, there's all this stuff and at the end of the day, man, it's just like sometimes you're just not going to play good disc golf.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think right now, like I said, when Paul came to New London, he was putting, he was coming down with his putter flat, like just straight down flat. I've never seen Paul do that ever. At Music City, it was on Annie and coming down even weirder for me to see. It's clear that he is mentally struggling with stuff on the green because he's doing it enough to change it up, which Paul in the past has been so confident he's never changing it. He goes down on hyzer, up on hyzer, pop it to flat. I think this offseason we'll see him get who knows how many putts and probably try to get that putting confidence back for the next season. And I would imagine we're going to see hyzer putter down Paul back because he's looking like Nate Doss right now.
He putted like incredible though at Worlds.
Well, see, that's the other thing.
He played really well.
Worlds for Paul is still. If there's a day in the next few years where we see Paul outside the top five at Worlds, my jaw will be on the floor. Because,
well, let's talk about it. That was my next thing I wanted to get into is who do you have? You know, they both have five world championships. Who has the higher likelihood of getting that sixth one first?
Paige.
Simply because will it ever happen?
Yes. I think both of them will get at least six.
Okay, so I think each one will win.
Percentage-wise, I'll say
I don't think both will get six. I'm not going to say who because I don't know, but I'll take the other side and say I think one of them will get it and the other one won't.
Well, I'm going to say percentage-wise, it'll be easier for Paige to win than Paul to win just because of the field size.
The amount of people she has to beat.
That's simply just field size. Players are going to keep getting better, and you know, you're going to have Kristen, Evelina, Henna, all that. It's not going to it's an easy walk in the park. But just percentage-wise, Paul's got to beat twice as many people in the field.
Probably more than twice.
Maybe twice as... Yeah, maybe
I mean,
maybe
Conrad more. Conrad won Worlds and he's the 15th ranked person in the world.
Yeah, but I'm just saying...
So...
I think Worlds for both of them, it's hard to imagine a world where they're not in contention at that tournament because of how much it means to them. And they both base their whole season almost on Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before it's prepping, they're thinking about Worlds. Season starts, they're thinking about worlds, get to Worlds, and it's basically like they put the weight of the world on their shoulders because everyone's expecting them to live up to that. One of these times they could crumble. What happens the year after they crumble, who knows? We haven't seen it yet. They both have been second. I mean, Paul's been in second or first for 10 years.
Yeah. It's going to be easy, man. It's going to be not easy. It's going to be interesting to kind of see what happens.
Yeah.
I think I'm excited.
I definitely think someone also brought up a good point. Emporia is next year. Personally, I think that leans towards Paige's favor.
Distance, yep.
A little bit more so than it leads to Paul's favor as far as like one of them getting six over the other, but they've both won in Emporia multiple times.
How did she do at DDO this year? Do you know?
I mean, off the top of my head, I do not know.
I'll pull it up real quick. All right. The next thing I want to dive into a little bit is I want to talk about... kind of a little bit of what's going on right now with the national tour situation. Well, not really a national tour situation, but I mean, I guess it is the whole debacle a little bit with if you guys watched Paige's Instagram story, her and Holly looked like mid round. Basically we're talking about how one of their baskets wasn't like they were on the hole and the basket wasn't where they were supposed to be played. I believe we had mentioned this. You guys had mentioned this in Grip Locked of where they put, or we might have mentioned it last week on the podcast. I'm not sure where it was of where there was like temporary baskets out, like these, like, you know, the smaller ones with like the soft baskets and stuff. There's temporary baskets.
Like little pop-up. I think it was a scout, which is just like a
little pop-up baskets. Yeah. Those are actually in, they were there for them to practice because they didn't actually have normal baskets. And you confirmed it on the Jomez coverage.
Yeah. So we had pictures sent to us of, like you were saying, the marksman, the scout. We didn't have confirmation when we shot the podcast last week. Shortly after that, Haley King posted on her story confirming that the baskets were basically temporary practice baskets. And then further confirmation for the rest of history is like if you go to Jomez flyover hole four, round one or round three at whatever the second course was.
Cedar Hill, I believe.
You can see where the FPO basket is. And it's just the scout basket, the temp basket.
So I don't want to go. I know you guys are going to dive into that a little bit. I don't really want to talk about too much about like national tour bashing and PDGA bashing because obviously they're not even dealing with it anymore. Right. But it brings up a good point because the tournament director, I believe, came out and said, based on the Paige Pierce Instagram, said, listen, the MPO field, the MPO card was putting. When they were, like, you could see them finishing putting. So there's no way they could remove the basket and put it in place because the MPO was still playing the hole. So
yeah, it kind of turned into like a he said, she said situation where like Paige's point that she made was a pretty solid, you know, reason to be upset. Like, hey, we're ready to throw our upshots.
But she left out the point that...
But then it's who do you believe? I didn't watch the story close enough. Well, I saw that point after.
Yeah.
But if the MPO is still putting on the hole and it's like a guy standing there waiting to move the basket, sure. Secondary point would be, should you have to move the basket to the national tour level?
So that is what a lot of people on Twitter brought up to me, is they said, hey, when or why should there be two different tours, essentially?
Mm.
Right? Like, when is there going to split it up and there's going to be the Disc Golf Pro Tour and then the, I mean, I guess the LPGA, right? Is that the Ladies Professional Golf Association?
I'd imagine what it stands for.
I'm assuming. Or the
LDGPT.
Or the WNBA, Women's National, you know. So when is the LDGPT or the WDGPT?
So we're not there yet.
I don't think we are going to disagree on this, because I have listened to so many pros' points, and I've listened to a lot of yours too that we've talked about this. I think, like, this has to happen for the sport to grow. The idea that having two different tours together, we're on the same page on, like, the broadcasting. Tons of people are starting to talk about, like, you know, a lot. There's more people watching NPO right now, so you hear more of it from that. But I'm sure there's also people that want to tune in and watch FPO.
Well, like Haley King, 7-8 start final round. We didn't see any of it because
there was a battle going on in NPO.
Yeah, because NPO, there was a battle between first and second, so they were prioritizing the NPO coverage over Haley King's start.
So if I'm a huge Haley King
fan,
it's
a nightmare, I'm sure it is, the switcher, because, like, Haley King shredding, but you also have a battle between for first and NPO, so what do you do? What do you show? They got to be split streams.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that probably is the first step, is just having it to where they're playing different courses when feasible, and then having the women go off potentially in the morning probably would be the best idea, because I think there's just a lot more situations that can go bad with, you know, if weather happens or anything like that, they just don't even play. Whereas if they go in the morning, they can maybe still get the round in. So I think that's probably the first start, but I just don't see a world where, you know, down the road when the money's there, because one of the big issues right now is there are a lot of couples that tour together. There are a lot of men and women that are in the same vehicle, same touring situation, going from city to city. And if you told them, listen, you have to do this by yourself, there would be a lot of people that couldn't tour, and that would not be good.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I don't think FPO field wise is at a point that it could sustain itself on an own tour right now.
It couldn't.
Because, I mean, realistically, we would like to see the FPO field size almost triple average field size. The tough part is, we're not at the tough part yet. The tough part's going to be when, like, right now we can fit a full NPO field and a full FPO field on one course if need be, such as Idlewild and stuff like that. I don't like it either, but it can be done. Tough part is not well.
The backups are terrible. Do we want to get into backups real quick?
Well, I was going to finish. My point was basically, what the tough part's going to be is when you have 140 FPO field and 140 NPO field, to where, let's say you do different courses and you split the stream, right? There's going to be a point where we're not, the pro tour coverage wise can do split streams. We've proven that, right? But they can do split streams, like you're saying, where FPOT's off in the morning, NPOT's off in the afternoon. They're using the same crew. Mm-hmm. What's going to be tough is there's going to be a point when FPO field sizes get so large that the FPO lead card and NPO lead card are going off almost at the same time. Mm. And if they're at the same tournament at that point, which they probably still should be, just structure-wise, because it should run that way for a few years, I think, until it's ready
now
to split.
Now you have two streams competing against
each other. And not only two streams, you also have spectators competing against each other, and you need two full crews, which then, like, what's the solution there? I think that's going to be a logistical problem that, luckily, I'm not the one paid to solve, but I think that's going to be a logistical problem that they're going to run into once the FPO field gets to that 130, 140, 100 some, however many players, to where we've got to figure out they got to be on separate courses. But now if they're on separate courses, it's almost like they're going to be competing within the same event, when you don't want that to happen, because that's just going to, realistically, that's going to end up hurting FPO right now. Whereas if how it is right now, you can send them off in the morning, have the spectators, the crew fully dedicated to FPO, lunch break, fully dedicated to NPO, best of both worlds. Once the FPO field size grows, I think that's when there's going to start to be a little bit of tension within the Pro Tour, and that will eventually lead to a healthy split which will form the LDGPT and the DGPT.
I like the LDGPT. That sounds good. And this is maybe a question for those listening too, and I would love to hear whether you're on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Let us know by either tweeting us or maybe posting in the comments. What other sports are able to do men's and women's at the same event effectively? The two that pop off my head right now that I can think of are tennis and the UFC, mixed martial arts. Both of those can kind of go back and forth, and I think they do it very well. The biggest, some people are already saying swimming, which, yeah, that's another one. Track and field, yeah. So there are others that do it.
The problem tough part is with those is quick.
They're quick.
They're quick, and they're also
UFC and
swimming and track and field.
Well, UFC and tennis aren't quick, but they have the matches spaced out to where, like, the big matches, right? Like if the number one player was playing someone, they're not going to be on top of the number one men's player playing someone.
Yeah.
They have them spaced out.
Well, UFC, for example, you're also only covering, like, a card might have, what, 5 or 6 fights?
The main card has, yeah. So, I mean, a big UFC 266 just happened. The main card had 5 fights. The prelims had 5 or 6. And then the early prelims had 5 or 6.
So that's so what, like 15 fights? So that's fights, 30 players, people. 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot different structure than.
No, I know.
200
players. No, I know. It's completely different.
And the same thing with tennis. You have 2 people playing at a time.
Yeah, a big tournament's going to have like 100 people potentially for both.
Yeah. So the structure, I think, is just a unique situation. I think the issue is back to what, you know, I was making the point of before is like eventually there's going to have to be a split.
Yes.
Eventually. The tough part is going to be the growing pain. Right now, I don't think we're feeling growing pains yet. There's some situations, but like for instance at the Music City Open, that's an avoidable situation. Just either always have FPO baskets in or have them play the same as MPO and change the tees. There's a lot of things that could be done so the basket doesn't have to be moved. Regardless, there's going to be growing pains once the FPO field size gets bigger and bigger, or even the spectators and parking and all of this stuff starts to become more and more of an issue on the tour.
Yeah, it's going to be so hard to run two events at the same time.
Yeah, there's going to be stuff that's going to cause tension. And the important part is waiting until the right moment to split so that both can be fully sustainable.
Yes.
And both can live on and you don't have the split happen. And then you're like, oh crap, what do we do? And either have to like bring it back and merge them back together or figure something out. You want to make sure that the split happens when they're both ready to split.
Yeah.
Which that's probably 5 to 10 years from now, I would say.
Who knows? All right, last topic we got here before we can open up the lines for your guys' calls, which, again, if you guys are wanting to kind of prep what you want to ask, it's not even ask. It's more, we're not really doing a Q&A. So it's like if you disagree with us on something that we've talked about tonight, that we've talked about in the past, or that I've posted on Twitter, except for live versus post, we're not doing that tonight, please call in. We always love taking your calls. But last topic I got is the Jordan Castro tweet. Mr. Jordan Castro tweeted out a photo, 2 photos actually, that I want to get into both real quick.
Nice.
Hole 9, actually both on hole 9. It looks like they decided to take those mozzarella sticks and put them 15, 20 feet in front of the tee box. And so the photo was beautifully done, I must say. it was beautifully taken to where it really made you be like, what the heck is this? And so, you know, that gives, or that moves us to the point of like artificial obstacles. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not even talking about artificial OB in this situation.
No.
We're talking about simply bringing something in similar to what you maybe would see at a miniature golf course. Would probably be the best example.
I mean, that's a bit too.
No, hard. I know. I did see someone say like, what's next? A windmill, which would be absolutely incredible.
Here's what I'll say.
To see a windmill just going in front of a basket.
I'll put it this way. The idea of the poles in front of the tee didn't upset me as much as how close they were together. If that makes sense.
So you would have been okay. I'm basically saying the gaps are what? 5 feet.
If these were trees, natural, fully natural,
have a shot.
I'd be ticked still. Well, I'd still be upset. Well, I'd say this is awful course design.
You wouldn't have a shot. There would be no gap.
That's what I'm saying.
If there were trees.
Well, I'm saying tall, skinny trees. Like if these just had branches on top, they were natural trees. I would still say the course designer needs to cut two down. Right? Mm. So
here's a question. What's a fair gap? Because I think this is something right now that disc golf, especially with the Disc Golf Pro Tour taking over, this is something that needs to be discussed about what is fair, right? Like what are fair gaps? What are like how far wide does a fairway need to be for there to be OB on both sides? Because you know, I think in certain situations, if you look at hole number one, I believe at Cedar Hill, which they just where Mason Ford ended up taking the playoff over Ricky, which was we don't have to talk about that putt.
Well, I have a conspiracy theory for that, but I'll go into that on Grip
Lock.
Leave
that for Grip Lock.
I'll go into that on Grip
Lock. We don't have time for it here, even though I do love conspiracy theories. I'll join you on the bogey banner.
There you go.
For the conspiracy theory, but I think that needs to be something. I think there needs to be like, hey. If you have, a gap, because they do this for drop zones already. They have like, if you want to make an island, your drop zone can be only 50 feet away from an inbounds part of the island, right?
So if you want to be sanctioned, yeah.
If you want to be sanctioned. So they have certain things like this in place. They don't have anything of like, hey, there needs to be this wide of a gap 40 or 50 feet off the tee box. There's nothing.
But I don't like that much regulation. I think that it basically...
Why not? Why can't you just say, hey, if you want to
that's not always going to be a good idea.
If you want to put a gap in front, if you want to put a gap that you have to hit, it needs to be at least 10 feet wide.
Well, these might be 10 feet because it looked like they were staggered. It looks like these are staggered.
I guarantee you I could touch post to post.
No, they're staggered.
I could touch post to post.
They were staggered for sure.
I know they're staggered, but I can still touch post to post. No, because
a staggered in disc golf, a staggered line could be, they could be 20 feet apart. But the actual gap you have to hit is only 5 feet because they're staggered. You see what I'm saying?
Well, okay, first off, the part we're talking about is the actual like gap. So like, yeah.
Yeah, but how are you measuring that?
I think you got to measure...
The two poles are 20 feet apart.
No, but I think you got to measure it... I see where you're going.
I'm just saying, and that's why you can't regulate it at the PDTA.
I see where you're going.
If you give me 50 feet, I can put them like this, and then you're never making it through.
Yeah, I see where... I mean, that's like hole 8 at New London a little bit. But I see where you're going, and that makes a lot of sense. I still think there needs to be a little bit more regulation of like
holes. I don't like regulating course design.
But you're going to end up having stuff like this. Do you like the post or don't like the post? Are you a post guy or not a post guy?
If the posts were not so close together...
You're about it.
I don't know if I'm about it, but for some reason, I wouldn't mind it by the tee as much as I mind it the actual mozzarella sticks that are by the green. Those tick me off more than by the tee, if that makes sense. There's still... I don't like the artificial being put there, but if it was like... If it was like a...
Spruce
I don't know.
Tree.
I don't know. If it was something...
A bush.
If it was something where...
A fig tree.
If it was just three of them. If it was just three of them in front of the tee, right? And the other two behind it are gone.
Okay.
And so you have like a 20-foot gap and it's just adding a little something to make you think.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't like the optics of it, but I probably wouldn't have even tweeted about it. I'd probably be like, oh, okay. But once you make it where it's like your best bet might be just going up and over or like a Spike Heiser layup.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, why are you trying to throw through this?
I don't think I'm going to try to throw that. I don't think I'm going to try to throw that.
But I'm just saying, I don't like the idea of the PDGA, it would have to be the PGA, regulating course design, like what you're pitching, because
it's not so much,
it limits you, it ties your hands to where you can't, you can't do things that might be great for the course you're trying to design,
but, I think there's
but because of the technical
things,
aspects, you can't.
There's certain things, like there should be something in place that says you can't have OB this close
in
to the
golf,
basket.
In golf, is there a rule you can't have a sand trap within 100 feet of your tee or 5 feet of your green? Or something?
I mean, there are...
Of course
are,
not.
There. Well, time out. The better question is there a regulation on where you can put a hole on the green? And yes, there is. I think
that's not even... But we weren't talking about where you can put a basket on the green.
No, but I'm saying there are regulations of like you can't have a pin... Or sorry, you can't... There's two regulations that I know of. You can't have a cup, pin, whatever you want to call it... more than or closer than three paces off of the fringe. And then the other thing too is I also think you can't have the pin on a gradient greater than something. So for example, if you have like a shelf, like a two-tier green.
But like imagine them saying...
You can't have it on the actual hill.
Imagine them saying you can't have a hill more than 50 feet elevation directly in front of the tee. or something. When it's like, well, but for this hole, that might be like the best bet.
No, I agree with you here. I agree with you in the sense
that... It was your idea. You brought up the PGA thing.
Hear me out. I agree with you that there should... I'm not saying the regulation needs to be insane, but I'm saying like, you know, what if someone puts like 50 tires swings in front of you?
Then the PGA should have screened that person. And now they're like, as a...
People in the comments were saying
that was actually a great example because that happened at Worlds Augusta. I had to play the course pre-Worlds.
Yeah, throw it through a tire?
No, they put out. We played it for freaking.
Oh no, on the ground.
Yeah,
people have said they wanted to see that.
That was awful. I played it. Who said that? Send them to me. Give them my number. I will tell them how awful it was.
That said, we need to have tires on the ground.
Was it the guy who designed the course I played? We're playing Collegiate Nationals.
It had likes. People liked it.
That's a horrible decision.
People liked it.
Because I played Collegiate Nationals on the course that was supposed to be...
High knees through tires.
Yeah, it was supposed to be where 2018 Worlds was. Or no, 2017?
Give me
Georgia.
Quicksand.
Georgia Worlds. Where Georgia Worlds was supposed to be. We played... It was called the Mean 13 is what we played for our finals to win. This is for Collegiate Nationals finals. It's an AM major. And gets hyped up. This is the course that's gonna, you know, is for Worlds, right? We get to this par 4, 450 feet down the fairway, perfect landing spot. There's just tires in the fairway. And so we asked the course designer, I'm like, what on earth are you, what are you doing? Like, why are they here? And he goes, well, I pictured this is exactly where Paul would land at Worlds. And I wanted him to like have to think more about it. And first off, he didn't know how far Paul could throw because that's where we were landing. So Paul would have been nowhere near it. So it ends up just like edit and major. We did it. But the PDGA, props to them, pulled the course from the guy once they saw it. I'm like, we can't put Worlds here and then put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
That is what the PDGA should do, is more so walk out and be like, this can't happen here. Pull it, put it somewhere else.
Yeah. But if I'm a course designer, okay, and I want my course to hold a prestigious event, it wouldn't be the worst idea for me to have a little bit of a blueprint of do's and don'ts. Right?
Yes.
Like a little bit of, like not too much, just but a little bit. Just a little bit.
Maybe more so just like a...
Just a little bit.
Maybe there should be like a class that certifies course directors.
Hate that.
Or not course directors, course designers.
Hate that.
Here's a video...
Hate that idea.
From Jordan Castro of the polls, so you can see how staggered they are.
I'm touching those. I'm
what is your wingspan? You're not touching those.
Those I'm not touching. You're not touching those. I think the ones in the middle I am. Touching those. I bet you sheets. I can touch them.
Just straight out?
Yeah.
Deal.
Okay.
All right.
We will post the photo on Instagram story.
Jordan Castro is saying 7+ feet. You don't have... I'd say that's 7 feet max. Maybe it'll be close.
Oh man, if it's fingertip, I'm counting.
If they're both touching at the same time, deal.
I'm counting.
Yeah. Even if it's just the leaves that are hanging around the wrapping.
Can
I
have Connor and Trevor pull my arm?
No.
To get a little bit extra.
No. Also, that makes it farther back. If you go behind.
No, like pull them out. Like,
yeah, just, no. They'll dislocate your shoulder before USDGC. It's an awful idea.
I'm gonna have to do some shoulder or whatever back stretches or something like that to really get loosened up here. All right, I think this is good. I think we'll go into some calls here. We'll throw the number up there.
Or is it already up there?
I'll throw it up right now.
He's going to throw it up there, call in, and remit. Okay, before you call in, sorry, because we have
more. Number's already up.
That's fine. We have more people listening right now than we did at the beginning. We are doing the Julius Caesar effect, okay? There were some calls that, you know, people in the chat, they weren't too fond of last podcast. So what we're going to do is if you do call in and I get the chat not feeling the vibe, I will Julius Caesar you. And if I get the thumbs down, we're just ending the call. So we got a call coming in right now. Let's see who we got. Lau. We're doing this on a new computer, so hopefully this works. Hello, hello. Can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Who are we speaking with and where are you from right now?
I got to mute you guys on YouTube because I'm getting some echo.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay. Mike from South Dakota.
Oh, this is our first South Dakota call. All right. Mike, what's going on, man? What do you want to talk about?
So I have to ask a question because I want an unbiased answer. Hunter, you guys have mentioned before what you guys think a scratch disc golfer is rating-wise. What would you say that is?
It's supposed to be 1,000 rated. I think now I would call it 1010 to 1015 rated.
That's going to help me even more. All right.
Okay.
So my debate topic is, it is harder to reach 1,000 rated in disc golf than to be a scratch golfer.
No.
And I'll tell you why. So there are, depending on where you look.
Do you have anything to say about this, Hunter? Are you out? Wait,
I've never been even close to being good.
So are you out?
At golf.
Okay.
I'm out.
Okay.
I'm out of the conversation here.
Okay. Okay. First off, can I ask you, Mike, are you 1,000 rated in disc golf?
I'm neither and either. So I'm like
neither and either. That's a shirt, baby. All right, go ahead.
I'm 900 in disc golf, and I'm about an 8 handicap in golf.
Okay.
So there are, depending on where you look, anywhere from 1.5 to 2% of golfers that are scratch golfers or better.
Okay.
If you take into account pro golfers, it gets to about 2.5 to 3%. Okay.
Seems very high.
There are 0.3% of disc golfers, of active disc golfers, that are 1,000 or higher.
Way smaller field, but continue.
Yeah, way smaller field, correct. So the other thing to keep taking into account is granted, it's a small amount, but there's 0.8% of female golfers that are scratch or better. And as you guys know, there's no one, females, that are 1,000 or better.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple other things, but I want to hear what you say first.
Okay, so I did get to 1,000 rated in just over a year, I believe. It would have probably been under a year had I played in that last tournament that I ended up not playing in. And I got to a plus like 2.7 or plus 3.2, I think, in golf in just over a year and a half or 2 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I've seen firsthand how much how much time and effort it takes to get to both of those, and it's just not even close. Golf is such a drastically. I mean, there are some people that literally no matter what you can do, they will be absolutely garbage at golf. And I know people that currently right now aren't good at disc golf, but if I taught them a few things and told them what tournaments to play, their rating could be way higher. So there are people that are 1,000 rated right now that if you put them on a course that doesn't suit their game, look at New London. Go to the Battle for Bedford right now, sort by rating and look at how many people are over 1,000 and did not do well at that course, because that course is super difficult and it requires a very, very high level skill set. And so that's where, just like in golf, you can't hide a handicap in golf. Like,
well, I don't know if I agree with that completely, because for example, I have courses in golf, my driver is terrible. Mm-hmm. So if I play on a course that's, 6,300 feet that are short par fours and, not super long par fives, and I don't have to bring driver out, like I'm shooting 2-3 over par. But then if I go to a course that's like 7,000 feet or yards, I meant yards, where I do have to bring driver out, I'm lucky to break 80. So I think that happens in golf too. The thing that I disagree with what you're saying, and maybe it's just like a terminology, but I like in terms of skill, like, minute skill or like ability, like, golf probably might be more difficult, but what I would say is I think someone less athletic and like less skillful can get a higher athleticism can get a higher level in golf than in disc golf. I think there's limitations athletically that will never let someone get to the top level in golf. Whereas I'm going to give you somebody, and I want you to, like, Donald Trump is a 2 or 3 handicap in golf.
No.
Okay.
He's not.
He has a gin handicap. He is a 2.5. He regularly shoots under 70. He is a 2.5 handicap in golf. And if you don't want to use him, that's fine. But think of, like, there's people who can shoot 70.
He's the president of the United States. I'm not buying that at all. I've watched his swing. He's not a 2 handicap.
Well, then he must be cheating. But
yes, yes, he is. Okay, so I think a lot of people would agree with me.
Let's switch it. Let's go this. There's people who are 70. You know, it's always like a.
I'm getting a lot of thumbs down here. We might have to Julius Caesar, our first caller.
If someone's 70 and they can shoot 70 in golf, which would be about scratch, do you think a 70-year-old could be a thousand? Could shoot a 1,000 rated round?
Yes, at certain courses. Yes, I think we're just gonna have to agree to disagree on this one. I like the topic. I love it. I could talk about this all day with you, Mike. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that don't like golf that are listening to this podcast. And so whenever I go on my rampages with golf, they just hate it. So I didn't Julius Caesar you, okay? I didn't. There was a lot of people wanting me to, but I didn't, Mike. But we appreciate you calling in, brother. Have a great night.
You bet. Have a good one.
I will say this. It was close. I will say this in relation to golf.
When he first said that, he was like, well, golf might not be harder than disc golf. I was like, oh, boy.
I will say this in relation to golfers' disc golf question. Is I do think I can like fathom, and it's probably because I've played disc golf a heck of a lot more. I can fathom getting to 1,000 rated way more than I can fathom getting to scratch at golf.
There are people that can't hit a golf ball. Like they just can't.
Well, there's people who can't throw a disc straight. They just can't.
No.
I think, for instance, John Daly.
Just played with Kelsey's mom, and after 5 seconds of telling her, hey, do this, she was throwing a Buzz SS 100 feet down the fairway. If I did that with golf, are you kidding me? Have you been to Topgolf? It's dangerous. It's dangerous to go to Topgolf.
Would you
now.
Say John Daly would think that disc golf's easier than golf?
Yes. Disc golf is way easier than golf. It's not even a question. Hello, hello. Who we got here?
This is Mike from Oklahoma. How's it going, fellas?
Mike, what's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. All right, here's the question I've got for y'all about making the pro tour more difficult. So, and again, this is kind of a wild idea, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts. In disc golf, every shot, nearly, unless you're talking about an upshot or a putt, you're having a run-up. What if at the pro tour level only, there were only run-ups for the tee shot? Everything beyond that was standstill. What's your thoughts?
You want to hit it first?
Well, yeah, I think we've talked about this at least on Grip Locked once or twice, and I don't mind the idea. I think it's a tough one to actually get to like be taken all the way through. I think the next step would almost be creating like hazard areas where if you land in that area, you can't run up. Question is, would it be taken as like a good move for the sport, or would it be taken as like a gimmicky look?
I think that's the big question. Is obviously right away we're always looking at ways of giving the advantage to the good shots and penalizing the bad shots. I think it's clear if you can throw it in the fairway, you get a run up, and if you don't throw in the fairway, you can't run up. That clearly would give it a huge advantage for a good shot. However, would it look weird? Would people start questioning like, why is this guy not running up? Why is this guy running up? I think there's a lot of different things that go into it. I think that would be a phenomenal kind of test run, like do it at an exhibition, do it at some sort of like tournament that doesn't really matter, just a fun tournament, and kind of see what the pros think, see what the fans think from watching it, and then go from there. But I love the idea. I've thought of it before and definitely have talked to a number of pros about it as well. So, yeah.
Hopefully. Do you think injuries would factor into that decision, or do you think if that were to be implemented even in a trial run, we would see potentially more injuries?
I think there'd be less injuries. Standstill? Are you saying
it would depend on players' form?
Yeah.
Some players might have to exert themselves more in a standstill than a run up.
Oh, interesting. Didn't think about that, but yeah.
One final point, and this is my final question of the night. I appreciate y'all taking my call.
Yeah.
Do you think that at the pro tour level only, there should be a maximum a flight number disc that pros have to play with? So, for example, say that's a 9-speed, everybody across the board, 9-speed only, at the pro tour level only. So I'm not sure if that's ever been discussed, but that's just my final question for y'all.
Yeah, I definitely have heard that topic brought up. Also, the topic of like there should be a bag limit, right? The number of discs that you should be able to carry as well. The issue I have with the flight numbers is there's no standard. So flight numbers are pretty much just made up from.
I can stamp a nuke with an 8-speed and call it a day.
Yeah. So that's the problem with it. Until they have some sort of standardized way of making sure all the numbers are legit, that won't work. But I'm not opposed to a bag. I think a bag limit wouldn't be the worst idea. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be like 10.
No, like, but 20, like 20 or something.
Yeah, you know, so. Yeah. All right. Well, appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, have a wonderful night. The standstill is, that has been a topic that has been brought up before. I've seen it on the Twitters. I've seen it on the Grams.
Yeah, I don't mind the topic, but again, it's a hard line.
Yeah, it's just tricky to see how it actually would play out. Hello, hello. Who we got here?
Hi, this is Danny from Columbus.
Hey, go Buckeyes.
Go Buck.
Dude, we got a lot of Buckeye fans. I love it. How's it going, man?
It's going well. So two topics. I'll let you choose which one. So those mozzarella sticks could be a good fairway bunker, what you guys were talking about as far as the hazard.
Ooh, yeah.
Or a disc golf simulator is within 2 years of production.
Oh, we get to pick which one we're going to say?
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll quickly say simulator for disc golf is never going to happen. like, you might have manufacturers and stuff have it, but it's not going to be anything like golf. I mean, there's so many companies that have tried to make golf simulators like a thing, as far as like, you know, where people come and play leagues and stuff. So many of them just don't work. I mean, I think you could see potentially like them having it at some manufacturers, you know, like Dynamic Disc, for example. They're huge in Emporia. I could see them having one. You could walk in and throw it into it. But as far as
the tough part though is like the
as far as like people owning them and stuff and them being reliable, I don't
well, it'd be tough to learn each disc within the like software of like how a Destroyer is going to react different than a Thunderbird than a
there's just so many yeah
the
so
golf
many,
ball it's pretty straightforward so of like how things. Fast it's coming off a club and
it would be rate. Fun still if you, even if it wasn't that accurate it would be really fun
sure yeah
and then your other question, someone actually brought up something similar to that a little bit. Instead of like putting the mozzarella sticks you know, off the fairway, is it kind of goes back to the bunkers, right? Of where having some sort of like lip. And I think we saw this a little bit at, I can't remember the name of the tournament, but there was one tournament that had pretty deep bunkers. And so basically it forced players that threw into the bunker, they were essentially below the fairway and they had, you know, something a foot or two above their head that they were now having to throw over. And so that caused for a much shorter, you know, next shot, because now you're having to throw higher up. You're not be able to throw on the plane that you want. So I think that, as far as like looks go, I think that would probably look better than just having like kind of sticks all over the place on the side of the fairway. And if you throw, if you do end up throwing into those kind of like deep bunkers or whatever it may be, I think it would pretty much take almost a heroic shot to make birdie, which would be exciting to watch as well.
Players I will say I like the like
huge flex shots or stuff.
I like the stick idea as like a rough, like you land here, you're in trouble type of idea, more so than like using it off the tee.
I would just plant trees.
But yeah, there's other options for it.
Yeah.
But in a situation like Winthrop where you can't plant trees, I still don't like the idea.
Who's ever going to stop you from planting trees, man? Save the earth. You don't like the earth?
Well, it's a college campus where
they don't like the earth?
It's basically urban disc golf.
Save the trees, man. All right. Well, we appreciate you calling in. Sorry, I got a little off topic, but I like the ideas, man. Hey, and if you do happen to find a disc golf simulator, you let me know.
It's got to stick like an arrow, I think, to get the angle right.
Oh, interesting. Dark horse. But all right.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Have a good one. He lost me a little
bit.
It's
got to stick like an arrow?
He lost me a little bit with the arrow situation. I think he was saying like a dartboard, like where you throw a dart and it sticks in the dartboard, or an arrow when you shoot an arrow on the
but
target.
But what has to stick?
The disc.
The disc in the ground?
Okay. No, I think in the screen.
Oh.
Like it just sticks in the, I don't know. That was, hello, hello. Who we got here?
My name's Evan. I live in Alvin, Texas.
Evan, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing. Got one question. How close are we to getting a larger company into the sport of disc golf, and what are some milestones we need to reach to have them in the sport?
Well, I mean, we just saw, I guess it depends on what type of like larger company you're saying, because we did just see LL Bean and Johnsonville be announced as, you know, sponsorship for the Pro Tour finale. Bushnell, I think, is a pretty large company. Guaranteed Rate, the mortgage company, I just saw a commercial during the Ryder Cup for them. So they're also a pretty large company. I think when it comes to Adidas or Under Armour or Nike or something like that, which is probably more along the lines people say, I think that's more of a Brody question. But I think we're already at the point where larger companies are seeing the value in the Pro Tour and are starting to invest money into there. So the biggest question is just like, when will players have a big enough brand themselves, I think, to catch the eyes of Nike and Adidas, unless you have other thoughts, yeah. Brody.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just it's a numbers game, man. It's a simple thing as that, of where you got to remember these companies that are large, when they actually do these campaigns and marketing and all that, it is a lot of work to them. So they would much rather, if they could, they would much rather do one and get all the numbers than do 100 to get those numbers. So yeah. That's the key, is making it worth their time. We want to make it to where they look at the numbers that disc golf is bringing in, the eyeballs that disc golf has, and they can say, hey, you know, because to a big company, throwing $100,000 at something is nothing.
Right.
And that's the problem, is we got to make it worth it to where they actually want to do it, or else it's just not going to be worth their time. Like, simply as that, there's like, yeah, we can see that there's value there, but just the headache of coming up with a marketing plan, of making sure it's being executed, of doing all this stuff, like, it's not even worth our time doing. So I think once that hits, then we'll be looking good.
Yeah, I agree. That sounds good, man. I appreciate you answering my question.
Heck yeah. Have a great one. All right.
Faded him out while he was still saying bye, but
that's nice.
It's fine.
We talk about this every week.
There's a lot of thumbs down.
There was? Oh,
you were on your phone tweeting, so I didn't know what to do because I can't hang up over here.
Well, I was just letting people know that we're doing, I wanted to tweet, you know, the Twitter is where the trolls live. And so I just want to let people know that we're taking live calls. We still really haven't had anyone call in that really, really wants to go after us. I'm still waiting for that. I don't know what just happened to that person. I'm sorry if that was you. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hi, this is Danny from Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson. What's going on, Danny?
What's up? Just talking about the kind of the mozzarella sticks out in front at USDGC and everything like that. I mean, I don't really like that obstacle, but I think it just looks bad. I'm not saying it's bad because they're there.
The optics.
But basically, I just wanted to ask you guys, since you guys were talking about fairways and everything like that, and design define fairways, what would you think about woods courses having to do kind of like what they did in the woods at Preserve or at Deglow, where they put down, I don't know how wide it was, 10 or 15 feet of mulch, just to give you a sense or a defined, you know, quote-unquote defined fairway of where to hit, or just like a manufactured, or not manufactured, but manicured surface for a certain width on the fairway, and then maybe even in circle one for putting.
Yeah, so I'll say Belton comes to mind with the circle one. Belton would they cut the greens way shorter than all the other grass around, so visually it looked really good, I think, on camera. And then also for players as well, it helped kind of give a gauge of where the circle, you know, 30 feet or whatever it was, close to the basket. And then I would say the other thing that I think is very visually eye appealing would be just cutting the fairways the same way, letting the rough or wherever you don't want players necessarily to have, you know, a good shot land, letting that grass grow a little bit and cut the fairways.
Right.
And then that, I think, just from a viewing standpoint, it would be interesting to see what USDGC does this year, because they have a lot of, obviously, OB. And I think if they let the grass grow where the OB is and cut the fairway short, I think from a player standpoint, and also if you're watching it as a spectator live or post or whatever, it's going to be much easier to be able to be like, that was a good shot. Oh, no, that was a bad shot.
Yeah, I think for USDGC, the tough part is, again, they just don't have full control over the grounds. So letting the grass get knee high isn't exactly going to be, I don't even think Innova's in control of the grounds crew. I think it's just Winthrop's ground crew. But when you're on the grounds at USDGC, you can tell very clearly by the rope, exactly like OB, hazard, stuff like that, the color. When you're on the ground and you're throwing shots, it's pretty clear, pretty evident. Visually, like through a camera, it can be tough. You almost have to know the course like a player to be able to tell when you're inbounds or out of bounds. An idea like this, I think, is helpful. But when it comes to a tournament like USDGC and some of the other things, we have to remember, too, that a lot of places they're playing are still currently public parks.
Yeah.
And defining a fairway in the middle of a grass field of a public park might be frowned upon currently. A place like Maple Hill or something like that, though, where it's private and it's only disc golf. Heck yeah.
All right. Appreciate you calling in.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Take care. Do we have the number up?
It's going up right now. I put it up when there's no caller.
Oh, okay. Yeah, some people were asking what the number was, so there it is. All right. I think I'm going to have to start Julius Caesaring people if it's not a debate.
I'm fine with it.
Because I feel like some
people...
You
just got to send it.
So, yeah. So, if you're calling and you're just asking a question, unfortunately, that's a different podcast. This is... we're trying to hit debates. So, if you don't give us the debate, you're going to get Julius Caesared. Hello, hello. No pressure.
What's going on, guys?
Oh, we're chilling. Who's this?
This is Ty from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Woo, pig, sweet.
Oh, okay. SEC in the house. What's going on, man?
Yes, sir. First thing I want to say is that Arkansas is actually the third best team in the SEC, not the Florida Gators. Get that Gator Chomp crap out of here.
I love it already.
I disagree heavily. Heavily. Aren't you guys about to play? Who do you guys play this week?
What's going on?
Who do you guys play this week?
We are playing the University of Georgia.
Oh, we'll see how that goes.
It's college game day, so it's going to be a pretty good game.
We'll see how that goes, because we had a pretty good game against Bama. So, All right. What you got for us?
I know this isn't a football podcast. It's a disc golf podcast. Let me get to some disc golf here. I want to talk about Big Germ's bag situation. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to discuss that yet or not. I just kind of tuned in. Have you guys talked about it at
all? No, we actually haven't mentioned it. No.
Okay. So I believe that Germ is like 70% to blame for the whole bag situation.
Interesting. Okay.
Let me explain. So obviously it sucks that someone broke into his car and stole the bag. But if you're a professional disc golfer, like, your bag is basically like your wedding ring, your wallet. It's your whole livelihood, and you should not be leaving it somewhere where someone could take it. So, like, that thing would be in my hotel room, locked up, in a safe if I had one big enough. I want to hear what y'all's thoughts are, since you guys are both people with bags that you care about.
I mean, here, I think obviously the best move is to have it in your hotel room, sure, but to say he's 70% to blame for someone breaking into his car.
Well, you have to remember Hunter has recently had someone throw a rock through his car, so he has a little bit of a personal attachment to this topic.
All I'm saying is the person who, I don't know, chose to break the law and break into a car and steal stuff out of it is 100% to blame. Like, you can say, like, yeah, Jerm could have been smarter and had the disc in his room, but you can't say 70% to blame. I mean, that's saying the person who committed a crime is 30% to blame for the crime. Like, that's insane.
All right. That was a hot take. I just wanted to get your reaction to that. my real question, or my real debate, is I think that the memorial should go back to being an Elite Series event.
Oh, God.
Ew. Why?
Okay. I'll tell you why. First of all, the way that it's set up, first of all, Phoenix is a city with 5 million people in the area. So if you want exposure, if you want those big crowds in the videos, you want a lot of people watching, make it a big event, there are tons of people. The disc golf community in Phoenix is crazy. The courses, I get that they're not the best, but I want to hear your thoughts on this.
I would say from playing it and going to, was I there for All-Star Weekend? I was.
Vista in Fountain Hills.
Yeah, I was there for All-Star Weekend as well. I will say that I think a lot of other places are, you know, have insane amount of fans of disc golf. And so I don't think you can right now say, hey, we got to go here because there's a lot of people that like disc golf. I just don't think you can because the course is not good. It's not good at all. So I think it's boring to watch for spectators at home.
Well, they also can't lock the park down.
They lock the park down. That's the toughest thing. So that's where it's real tough to have any sort of... Because the other thing we're not even discussing right now is the fact that these tournaments and stuff, they need to slowly over time like build out, right? Like right now, tournaments, like you don't really even see anything really happening the first couple days before the event. Heck, I've had practice rounds at Memorial where we're having to like walk up 300-400 feet to tell people like, hey, can you not have your picnic right in the middle of the fairway? So you don't really like before the tournament, you don't even really see anything really happening. Like there's actually going to be an event there. And that is, I think, something down the road will happen. Like any other sporting event, they normally will have stuff going on leading up to that event. Same thing, I'm sure, like the Arkansas-Georgia game. I doubt that there's nothing happening before the game starts, right? Like nothing's happening right. And in the games. There's going to be tons of events happening prior. And I think the Disc Golf Pro Tour wants to do that as well. How the heck are they going to be doing that at an open park where anyone like, right. I mean, just think about how terrible parking could potentially be when you talk about all these fans and stuff. Like what if there's a over 70s walkathon going on?
Such a random example.
No, there. If you've been to Memorial, you know, there's a lot of elderly people. A lot of people go there and retire. Oh, yeah. So like, what if there's like a, you know, Susie sends out an email to everyone saying, hey, let's show up at 8 o'clock and walk. And all of a sudden you've got 100 elderly women power walking through the park. And now like the parking is, I mean, there's just a lot of things that could go wrong. So I would say
that. Y'all were talking about obstacles earlier. What better obstacle than not hitting a million?
Oh, geez. Oh, gosh. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I think
right,
it's fine.
All right.
I think it's
right,
fine saying.
Right. Thumbs down. Get him out of here.
Get this guy out of here.
I just want to say, yeah, it probably belongs as a Silver Series. You guys are right about that. And I just wanted to thank you guys for letting me call and thank you for your time and for your perspective on this.
Of course, so, man.
Go Hogs. Go Gators. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, good luck this weekend. All right. Take it easy, brother.
Yes, sir.
I think they're just going to get absolutely smashed by Georgia.
I will say,
I think they're going to get smashed.
The whole, like, it's a popular area. Fine argument. You got to have the course to back it up, though. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
You can't go to a popular area and have a trash course.
Yeah, people will drive hours away from popular areas.
The 70% thing for someone creating crime is wild. Hello, hello.
Hey, this is Jack from Massachusetts.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. So here is my, I hope it's a debate topic. You know, I've been listening. It's like kind of debate, kind of not. Hopefully this one gets you guys kind of fired up. So I think that at all Disc Golf Pro Tour events, there needs to be a certified official that is not a player on each hole and at the beginning to before the round even starts and at the very end. And really, I've been thinking this since Waco, specifically. Nico was taking a lot of time there in that final round when things were starting to blow up for him, and Caleb's a nice guy, so he's not calling him on that, but it needs to be called, in my opinion. You know, our sport has rules. And then also, and this is something that I don't think gets talked about ever, but it should, is that discs say PDGA approved for a reason. So why aren't we enforcing to make sure that all discs people are using are PDGA approved?
Ooh.
And I think that's where the person at the beginning of the round is there to, or a couple people, because that can get tedious, but to go through everybody's bag and make sure that the only discs that they have in there are PDGA approved.
Which one do you want to go first?
Well, I think on the PDGA approved topic, I think that having to check every single player's bag is a nightmare. We've talked about it before. I think it was actually with Paul way back.
Destroyers.
Yeah, it might have been with the Destroyers.
It was Ricky's Destroyers came out
180 grams or something. They were not PGA approved, but they were like the Ricky run of Destroyers, not Destroyers in Ricky's bag, because that can get really confusing.
Yeah.
But I think that the way to do that would be random checks during player check-in, so you don't know if your bag is going to get checked or not. So basically, you have to have it up to standard, because if you go to check-in and you're you know, they check your bag and they can weigh every disc in your bag and make sure it's up to PGA standards. And if one's wrong, then you get some type of
How do they do that in baseball? Do you know?
Well, baseball, like the grip, they can call it at any point in the game.
The other team can say, "Hey, I think."
Yeah, and then the umpire walks out and you have to check.
Is that the same thing with like the deflated footballs?
I'm not sure. I'm more thinking of it as like
other people calling.
I'm more thinking of it as like a Pro Tour random drug test type situation, but instead of drug test, it's random disc test.
Instead of like players saying, "I think this person."
Yeah, the Pro Tour is randomly checking the entire field
just to kind of keep you.
Yeah, but as far as the officials, I personally think it doesn't need to be every single hole and before and after, because now we're talking 20 some volunteers that are all certified officials at every event. But I do think, and it looked like in the PDGA's announcement today that this was something they were going to try to put more emphasis on.
It's awesome to see.
My like goal would be like one every six holes, or maybe one every three holes, so 3 to 6 people, to where you can call them over so that a problem isn't going to go on for the entire round. So after 3 or 4 holes, you can be like, "Hey, Nico's been taking so long in his putts. Can you walk with us for a few holes and enforce the rule?"
Yeah,
that type of thing.
Get those babies on a bird, and they'll zip around the course in no time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, my thought about not having one on each hole is because, there are countless examples of, you know, somebody making a call and it just changing the whole dynamic of the card. You know, you can find compilations on YouTube all over the place, of that happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have an official, let's say you have an official that's, is only, for like every 4 to 6 holes, if on that first hole that those players get there, he calls something, that player's going to have an issue with that official for the remainder of the holes that he's there, right? So like, he could call somebody on a foot fault or on a time violation on their first or second hole with that official. And by the time they get to the end, if he's still calling things, he or she is still calling things, then that player could just be, making it worse and worse and worse and more tense for everybody, because they'll just keep having the same issue with the same official. That's why I think that, more of one on each hole, though I understand that that's, that is a lot of certified officials and volunteers. It's more unbiased and more balanced the whole way through.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a perfect world that'd be awesome. I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
Fair.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Have a good one, brother.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at it, like, it's already hard enough to get like someone that knows how U-Disc works. Now to think that you're going to get 18 or 36 people, if the FPO is playing a different course, that like know all the rules. I mean, you're dreaming. There's a reason why there's not 50 refs in like certain situations. It's because, it's tough to get everyone on the same page. Hello, hello.
Hello, this is Joseph from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Pretty good. I think y'all should debate about like players showing more emotion. Like when you watch NBA or NFL and like somebody does something really sweet, you see them like celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And in disc golf, you may have like Ricky Do Raptor legs after one big putt or something, but I feel like everybody's too robotic and it's kind of holding the sport back. Cause like, I mean, you have Chris Dickerson, I love him to death, but like, it's like a robot out there. He makes his putt. He just slowly, he walks it in, grabs it. And I love him. Like, he's one of my favorite players, but he doesn't show emotion. And I mean, you need that, but you also need kind of like the bad boy, kind of like Nico, to kind of get everybody riled up and debating and growing the sport that way too. And I feel like we only have Nico. We don't have anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, do you have anything to say on it?
I think that comparing it to basketball is tough just because
it's a completely different sport.
Well, once, like if LeBron dunks on someone, of course he's going to flex on him. But if I hit a 25 foot putt, I'd look like an idiot if I beat my chest and, after a 25 footer of like, what are you doing?
I think, go ahead.
Well, like in golf, like even if we compare it to golf, like you have the golfers that get mad and throw their bag in the lake.
You have that in disc golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the cameras, like I see it for Nico, but I don't see them covering it for anybody else. Like we had that one blow up.
Well, Nico is just, what is it called? He's the martyr. Is that the one I'm looking for? I don't know, where like everyone just, when you talk about something, you're like, oh yeah, Nico.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, man, I've played with a lot of people. They swear, they curse, they punch the ground, they kick their bag, they, you know, not tear, but they fold their discs.
I mean, Eagle 2 years ago punched the ground and broke his hand, had to drop out of USDGC.
So I think if you look hard enough, you'll see it. And definitely if you go to a Pro Tour event and you like walk with a group for the entire time, you definitely will see it. So, but
see, I wish they would cover that more on like the live production. Like Paul misses a 40.
They do. He
kicks his bag.
They do.
Just keep an eye out for it.
Keep an eye out for it.
I just think it'd be cool for like a Nomez of Paul missing a 40-foot putt and he just turns around and punts his bag. That'd be pretty awesome.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks for calling in. All right. I think a lot of people do that stuff, and I think we've seen.
Well, I think part of it is he was referring a lot to post produce, and of course you're cutting that
too quick. Yeah,
well, of course you're cutting that out of post produce.
Someone that watched live, because if you watch live, you're like, I don't know what you're gonna do. You missed a putt, and like
Adam Hamm is, not to bring this back up because I know he hates when people bring it back up. A few years ago, the camera's too close to him after awful shot.
I thought you're talking. I thought you were talking about the worlds where he slammed it down and it bounced off the basket.
That
too.
That's all been on camera.
Yeah, I think,
but if you're not watching live, you're not seeing that. Because, of course, you're cutting that out.
And then I'll say the celebration thing where you're like, if I make a 25-footer, I'm going to look like an idiot. I think that's because how quick disc golf is.
Yeah, it's how quick a disc gets to the basket.
How quick a disc gets to the basket. But then also, like as you're walking to get your disc out of the basket, someone else is already preparing their putt. So it's almost this thing of like you trying to get out of their way, where I think as crowds get bigger, more roars and stuff like that, you can get a little more celebration with the crowd as you walk up to the basket, and it's not so much like get out of the way. So,
yeah.
All right. We got another one coming in here. All right. I'm going to start. Who's Julius Caesaring?
You.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing wonderful.
All right, so here's what I'm thinking. I am thinking that the PDGA pretty much killed itself today.
Okay, how so?
What do they do now? What do they do good? Did they do anything of value anymore? Like, they really weren't doing much of the tour before. They're kind of running that terribly. But now I'm thinking, like, they can't even hide behind that anymore. They can't even like have the mysteriousness of like, oh, they do all the big tour events and stuff. They have nothing now. They're just bidding that crap out and making money off it.
I mean, this is exactly what I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast, where like, this isn't on you. I'm not saying something bad about you. The PDGA is just doing a bad job of marketing themselves to where players don't know what the PDGA does. Like the PDGA,
I looked it up today, actually.
Yeah, like they do a lot of stuff behind the scenes. As a tournament director, I am very grateful for the PDGA and the advancements they've made on the tournament manager, the insurance they provide, the sanctioning, that whole process, the actual rule system. But if I had never run a tournament, I'd be in the same boat as you. Like, screw these guys. They just put out the one thing they do. They just gave it to someone else.
Well, I mean, you got to look at it like, I looked at the financials. If you look at the financials, take the tour away, they pretty much exist to kind of self-sustain. Like, between the cards that they mail out, fulfillment, blah, 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 that nonsense, and their actual expenses just to pay themselves, that's like $3 million out of the 4.6. And then they have $200,000 expense to the tour. It's nonsense. They have their own like private getaway where it's like a Disc Golf Hall of Fame / comfortable living room arrangement is down in Georgia, which is, you know, 1,000 miles away from everybody. And they don't have camping, and they don't have RV hookups. Everyone on tour lives in a van. They could do a big deal there. No elite stuff there. That should be like the course that blows minds. It should be wired for cameras, everything. But they don't do anything like that. And what you're talking about, like helping with like the insurance, we could whip that together. An insurance, I could call my Allstate guy, and he could put something together for us.
Oh, I love it. I mean,
you're making a lot of sense.
I think the thing is, though, is what you're talking about right now, I don't have the information, so I can't confirm or deny.
The financial stuff he brought up is, I don't know if those exact numbers are dead on accurate, but when I looked at it, a big chunk was going to stuff that you're like, is that what most of the money from the PDGA should be going into?
So I think
existing stuff.
Yeah, I think
they got other expenses, trademark, legal services, business fees, $430,000.
A lot of that, a lot of that is the paying for the rating system. That's what people I think still don't know somehow.
Well, we paid $1 million for that
over like $244,000.
And by the way, if I had the algorithm that they use, I could do it from my home computer. It's not that complicated.
Well, I was able to do it myself on an Excel spreadsheet. That's how I knew how close I was to getting to 1,000. Like I was able, I was literally 0.3, like I was in between like 0.3 and like 1.5 every single time.
Yours is probably the closer one. Okay. They probably just have rounding errors from like using their old,
but I think, you know,
pile of guidance computer.
I think what you're saying though, we're going to start seeing more of it because as more money is coming into the sport, as more fans are coming into the sport, you have more people that are like, what is going on? It's a lot easier when you don't have as many people in the sport to like be like, hey, where is our money going? But as things get bigger and bigger, you're going to have more and more questions that you have to answer.
Here's its comparison for you. I always thought like, oh yeah, they're growing the sport. They always picture like kids and their families playing. $25,000 went to youth and education, $88,000 for marketing.
Mm.
You know, that their international disc golf center, $62,000. That's probably a profit center. They probably make money off that too. But they don't, like you're talking about the ratings. They charge for that. If you run a tournament that's sanctioned, you're paying for that. Yeah. They invented U-Disc 3 years after U-Disc did it right. You know, they're reinventing wheels out of, you know, square blocks. It's just they're not bringing anything new to the game. They're not, you know, what am I, $50 a month for an ID card, the ID cards and fulfillment, that's $1.5 million. You know, give me an app that has my card number on it or I could write it down on my hand.
I do find it,
what are we doing here?
I am curious how do you know how much money, because this is actually kind of interesting, do you know how much money they spend on like that monthly magazine they send out?
Well, fulfillment was $776,000, which is receive and fulfill membership, laborship, blah, blah, blah. And then, I don't know, member benefits, it might be, which was $647,000, which is new disc, new member minis, Aceberg and Eagle Club gifts, ratings, 10 and 20-year member bag tags, contact support, stickers, etc.
Dang.
So I don't know which one it is. It's out of that $1.5 million, but you know, like that's an advertisement. That's not like out of, you know, like some big out of pocket expense. They're pure, you know, no corporate interference. That thing, that's got like 2 pages of content and like 80,000 pictures of discs that I can't buy.
Well, you know, I'll say this. I know Hunter wants to dig more into these numbers and stuff. And I think you bring up a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't think we're going to really talk more about it than what we've already have, but I think people listening, it might be eye opening to some people to hear these numbers. And, I would definitely say if you are a PDGA member and you want to know for yourself, you can do the research. You can go and check it out. So we appreciate you calling in and giving us that info.
I've got a wall of text going up on the debate club on Facebook. Also, your shirt reminds me of Saved by the Bell. I don't know why.
Thank you. All right, have a great night. Later. I do call this my Saved by the Bell shirt. So
that was dang.
Wow.
He was ready.
Like, I feel like it wasn't really a debate, but that was probably the best non-debate call we've ever had. All right, I think we take one more debate call. So if you really are feeling spicy, if you got something good, man, it's tough to follow that up.
He was feeling it.
He was, hopefully he's a concurrent caller. Hello, hello. Hello?
Hey, what's up, man?
How's it going? Who we got?
Going pretty well. I'm Jacob. I'm from Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, very well. Jacob, what do you got for us?
So I think there's a problem in disc golf in the rules, and it will be a lot like baseball and what baseball has right now. So the rules around things that will help with, like the bags, you know, some people use chalk, some people use a lot of different things like that. Recently in a tournament down here in Mississippi, somebody was using spinner for a little bit better. And there was nothing in the rules about it, so they had to let him use it. There was a lot more discs. There's a lot more angles that he was able to hit that a lot of us weren't because he had just better grip and was able to throw the disc a lot better.
Is anyone else hearing that popping noise?
I think.
Is there popcorn going on in the back? Are you making popcorn down there?
It's something with the connection. It's something with the connection.
You're not making any popcorn. Okay, we're gonna hang up on you just because of the popping noise, but we'll try to answer your question. Sorry. That's like a mini Julius Caesar. That might be, I don't know if I count that as the first one. Just because it did sound like popcorn was being popped.
For some reason, it happened exactly when you were touching your mic, so I thought it was you touching your mic. It's always like, I muted you, then I muted me, and then he was in the middle of talking, so I didn't want to mute him, but like I kind of had to. I don't even know his question. It was something about grip, but I was so focused on the popping that I don't know what happened.
I know. Now I just want to have kettle.
Just bring the next person.
I want to have some kettle corn popcorn now. That's all I'm thinking. Hello, hello. Who we got?
Hey, this is Josh Greenway from Augusta, Georgia.
Josh, what's going on, brother?
Not much. How are y'all?
Oh, we're chilling, man.
Well, I brought up a topic last week in the comments, and I was just going to see y'all's thoughts on it. But it was in regards to rebranding how we sell discs. And it was something that my buddy had talked to me about, and I really debated with him about it. And I wasn't sure if I agreed, but I was just going to see y'all's opinion. But, rebranding the disc in a way that maybe it's not as like of a kiddie sport, you know, maybe somebody looks on the outside and sees a disc called like,
oh, you're talking about the names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we talk about that previously on here or was that just in the comments? And I just remember it from there.
I don't know. I'll put it this way. I think the most professional naming system looks wise is the Discmania or the Prodigy naming system. D1, D2, MD3, PD2, P2, so on and so forth. Issue with that is once you make a D1, that is your most overstable driver. So whereas like a end of a naming system of like an Archangel, T-Bird, Firebird might seem, or like you can go with any other company that's doing it that way, might seem where it's a little bit more like, as you said, kiddish or something like that. I think it's the better way simply because it allows as much freedom as possible. So as the game develops, the Eagle, for instance, was one of their like OG discs. Imagine that being their D1. That's like their fastest, almost overstable driver. And now the game has developed 30 years past it, and we need a 12-speed, but their D1 is a 7-speed. And it's like, well, we kind of backed ourselves into a corner. So then you have to make the X1 or the H1 V2 and stuff like that, to where you put handcuffs on yourself if you abide by a more professional looking naming system.
And I'll say this, I think a lot of people will be surprised with my answer to this. Is you would think I would want it to be more like that, like the Discmania Prodigy way, but I'm now thinking about it, there are a lot of other sports that have specific like unique names, like golf clubs, for example. The driver for Callaway, just because I worked with Callaway, I know him decently well. You had the Epic, you had the Flash. I think Maverick might have been even one. So there's names there. I'm sure tennis rackets, you've got names. Shoes for basketball have specific names for them. Like I just think there are a lot of other sports that do it as well. Big Bertha, that's a great name. Like at first, when you think of golf, you're like, all right, driver, 7-iron, putter. But they do actually have names. And I think if you do dig into a little, you know, tennis rackets, baseball gloves, baseball bats, I think you won't see that kind of standardized like numbering system or lettering system. I think they will have unique names. And so, you know, are some of the names kind of whack? Sure. But those discs probably won't sell that well. So I think companies will start realizing what names are doing well and what names don't, and go from there.
Do you think that you could brand a set more as like if you had a lineup of like, I know like you can buy beginner packs, you know, of just a few different discs, a putter, mm-hmm. driver, whatever, but like if you branded it in a store with a section of disc golf stuff and you've got like this whole section of Prodigy, and it's like this set that's got everything you need. And for somebody who goes in, like, I want to start disc golf.
Oh, like a 10-piece set almost, like a full bag.
Right, and it's like branded. Maybe it's all a similar color, and like it's all similar design. The bag matches and everything, but it's like you brand it to where somebody comes in and like, I want to start disc golf. This is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
No, I mean, I think the way that beginner sets are set up right now make a lot of sense because it is like $60 or something like that, I think is normally the price range for a three disc beginner set, something like that. And, you know, I think if someone is like trying to, you know, just try something out for the first time, I think that's a good price point for them just to get three discs and go out there. Now, when you're talking about, you know, adding 10 discs, now you're looking at a price point of anywhere from what, $150 to $200. And you add a bag in there, now you're looking at like $300. I think that might be a tougher sell because for the most part, from what I have seen with new players is they go to the course a couple times, they have no idea what they're doing and they either love it and they go and they start researching and watching videos and stuff, or you have like local pros or local players in the area start helping them being like, hey, you need to try this disc out. You need to try this. And then people love being able to go, if they can have a store, be able to go and actually see the discs and try, you know, pick them up, hold them, feel them. So that's why I don't think it would make the same sense as like something like in golf where you go in and you can literally buy a full iron set. Because each, you know, I can go in and buy an iron set and Hunter can go and buy an iron set and it's going to do the same basically for us where, you know, some discs based off of how, I don't know. I think it's just a tougher sell. I think it's a tougher sell, you know, trying to get someone to spend $200, $300 on disc golf right off the bat.
Right. No, that makes sense. I was on the border too, and that was something I just talked about with my brother.
But it is an interesting thing. I think it could work. I don't think it would work necessarily for like beginners, but it could potentially work for like if you wanted to like give a deal, right? Where it's like, hey, you get a bag and 10 discs. This would normally cost you, like if you did it like a la carte, this would normally cost you like $500. You can get it for $375. I think some players will do that. So I think that's how you would do it, is more of like a discount off of like buying it, you know, as a batch. So, all right. Well, appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for calling in. Have a wonderful night.
You too.
All right. You know what?
I don't know what beginner sets you've been buying.
What are you talking about?
You said $60 for beginner set.
Three discs. How much are three discs?
I mean, they mainly sell for like $25 to $30.
They sell three disc sets for,
I mean, we have
$30?
A beginner set. I'll look at our beginner
set. Look at our beginner set. My gosh. Are we having a steal right now?
Well, the whole point of a beginner set is you give them a deal for buying it in a pack.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm still thinking. I mean, I'm thinking like $60 in the sense of like.
That'd be three of the most expensive discs you could possibly buy.
But like sales tax, the heck? Shipping, right?
Well, you didn't say all.
Okay.
You
didn't say to your door. I know. I know. I'm trying to like.
You're trying to dig yourself out of a hole right now.
My bad. $45 with tax. No, that includes tax.
That includes tax and shipping.
And shipping? What is our start?
I'm finding it. Dang it. What did I just do?
Oh boy.
I'm finding our starter set.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm super. Maybe I'm rocking the Gucci starter set.
You're shopping at Louis Vuitton or something.
The Louis.
What do we call it?
I don't know. But
here we go. Starter pack. So the Trilogy starter pack, baseline 27, Discraft all premium 34.
Okay. $34 for what do you get? A Scorch?
It was a Heat, Soul, and a Challenger.
Heat, Soul, Challenger for $34?
So normally would be I can't do the math. Normally would be like 40 some. 40 to 50. All right, range.
So it's like a $10 discount for getting them?
Yeah.
All right. That's not bad.
Your starter set, which were three $20 discs, was even cheaper than you named.
Okay, to be fair though, you like you struggled with numbers like 30 minutes ago. I don't know what topic was, but you didn't even try. You were just like, the numbers got to me. I'm not even gonna try. I don't know what it was. Maybe I just made that up too.
I think you just made that up.
Who knows? I'm really against, you know, just to go kind of, I don't know if this is going more into the Bogey Banner situation, but what I'm really excited about is the live stream tomorrow.
Oh, the ping pong live stream.
Yeah. That's something that we can do a quick debate about.
Can I just ask a question live on air?
Oh, geez.
May I know it's against office rules.
Yeah.
may I get my paddle back for the ping pong live stream, even though I lost it fair and square?
So let me guys explain what we're talking about. So,
well, actually, I have to explain what we're talking about, because if you explain it, it also breaks office rules.
True, but I'm not going to explain that part. Okay. I'm going to get to the... I always mess up the company's name. What's the company's name?
Foundation Disc Golf.
No.
Stiga.
Stiga. Okay. So Stiga hooked us up with a dope ping pong table. Potentially, actually, it's probably pronounced table tennis, because that's how nice it is. And they hooked us up with, I believe, like six paddles.
A lot of paddles.
We looked it up. The paddles are like $100 a piece.
Yeah.
Very nice paddles. So we immediately all claimed a paddle and signed the paddle, okay? And
the packaging for the paddle. We're not maniacs.
No. We're not signing a paddle. We also put all of our paddles back into the boxes after we're done playing.
Yeah, after every day.
We're respectable players here. So we made the rule that if you use someone else's paddle, or if someone else like comes in, like if your buddy comes in and is like, hey, after hours, let's play some table tennis, comes in and you let him use my paddle and I find out about it, we get a ping pong sting you in the back, yeah. Right? So
for each instance.
So we're super stingy about the paddle situation. Now, we do have two paddles that are absolute disgusting. These are the paddles that you would like go down to your like grandparents' house that have just been like sitting there for 40 years, and they have like no padding, and you like hear it. It's like ding, ding, ding.
It's the cheapest paddle you can get.
Cheapest paddle.
We got them. They're from my house. Because it was like, we played Polish.
Your parents' house or your grandparents' house?
My parents' house.
Yep.
Which they are grandparents now, because I have two nieces. So.
Point.
But basically, we would play a game called Polish ping pong, and we'd have up to 14 people playing at once, and so we needed cheap paddles. So we just went to, Walmart maybe, and bought the cheapest paddles we could get our hands on, because for Polish, you just got to get it back on the table. Yeah. You're not playing competitive ping pong.
Yeah. So the rule was, if you get skunked, and we played, so if you play to 21, a skunk is 11-0. If you play to 11, a skunk is 7-0. If you get skunked, you are no longer allowed to use your paddle for the rest of the week, and you have to use one of the crappy paddles. And I can't talk about anything else.
So that's the secondary rule, is to save. We're all way too competitive in this office to allow people to gloat about wins. So we made a rule that if you mention your win, you also get stung. So you also can have a free sting pong hit. So you can choose if you want to gloat about your win, but it's going to come with a punishment. It's also a great way for someone who just lost.
I took one today.
You did. Gotten it yet.
I haven't gotten it, but I did let everyone know. I don't want to get another one, but I let everyone know.
So basically, so what ended up happening is Brody skunked Connor. I'm a third party. I can talk about it. And Brody skunked me. And so then we made up an artificial rule of Connor and I had a skunk match.
Yeah.
Of where we both used our skunk paddles, and whoever won the skunk match got to get their real paddle back.
Yeah.
I lost that to Connor. It was competitive, at least. I lost that to Connor. So now we're supposed to stream a ping pong like tournament. At least it's at least going to be me, Brody, and Trevor tomorrow night. We normally stream video games on Twitch. Tomorrow we're going to stream ping pong. And I'm just trying to ask if I can get my paddle back just for the tournament, because if not, I'm just going to get skunked and skunked and skunked and skunked. It's just for a week. The skunk rule lasts for a week, but I need it for this.
So if it is us three, I think it needs to be unanimous between us three.
All right, I'll bring it up to Trevor.
So you obviously are saying you want your paddle back.
Yes.
My vote is I don't think it matters one way or the other for me.
I just want it back for 2 hours. I'm willing to give up Monday. We'll be at UCC.
I'm telling you, it doesn't matter to me.
I'm willing to give up another day.
You can use whatever paddle you want. I don't care. It's not going to matter.
Well, tomorrow's a different day. You were on something today.
No,
I want to get you tested for PEDs.
I'll give you a little pro tip. This is exactly what I did. Okay. I did play the national champion in Taiwan. Okay.
So you warmed up
national champion in Taiwan. I watched the ball.
What?
I watched the ball.
You watched?
Watched.
You watched the ball.
I watched the ball.
What do you normally watch?
So, I don't know.
What are you
watching? It was almost like the receiver that is like, starts running and starts looking about where they're running before they've caught the ball. I think I was doing that in table tennis. I think I was like, when the ball was coming in, I was looking more about where I was trying to hit it based off of where you were than watching the ball hit my paddle. And I went back into my tennis days where I just ran I don't know what. I took down everyone in Jacksonville, okay? Go look at the records. U14. I'll bring the trophies in to prove it. No one was even close. And one of the things that I was taught was you watch the ball hit your racket.
Okay.
You watch the ball hit your racket and follow through your racket. I started doing that in table tennis, and it was just night-night for everyone. So I don't...
I just want my paddle back tomorrow. Maybe I don't. Maybe I want an excuse. I want it back just because I think I can give Trevor a competitive game. Without my paddle back, I won't give Trevor a competitive game. But if you want to check that out, I believe it's going to be on our main YouTube channel.
Yeah, I think we're going to put it on the foundation.
Main YouTube channel tomorrow night. We're also going to force it. Winner and loser of each match is going to have to go into a press conference.
Yes.
Immediately following the match.
There will be press conferences.
That will get interesting. Like I said, we are extremely competitive. And if we go 2 hours of nothing but ping pong,
we're streaming for 2 hours?
8 to 10.
Whew, I got to drink a Red Bull.
8 to 10.
I got to go to bed. Yeah. What are we doing?
So don't worry. If you want to check that out, we'll post more about it tomorrow. It's going to be on our main channel, Foundation Disc Golf. You'll be able to check it out. It's at least going to be me, you, and Trevor. Hopefully we can get Connor in. He was on the fence. Possibly we can sneak Silas and Carson in, depending on what they're doing. Maybe even get Steph Curry in. He was in the chat earlier.
Oh, nice. Also, just want to say next week is the USDGC. I will be there playing, competing. You guys will be doing tons of media as well, so stay tuned for that. I think debate night, I think we should do a big debate night next week. I think we should bring in some big boys.
Okay.
I think we should add a little flavor to the podcast. So we will have, I don't know who yet, but there will be new faces next week. I just decided.
Yeah, and if you're interested in what we have planned for USDGC, be sure to tune into Grip Locked this Thursday. Mm. We're going to go through our detailed plan of... Basically, there's going to be like 5 Grip Locked episodes.
It's going to be fascinating.
Full Grip Locked episodes from USDGC. Going to be super exciting. And we'll walk through kind of what that's going to look like. And we'll be at USDGC all week. Super exciting
polos.
Stuff.
Get your polos. If you're listening to this late, they're probably gone. But get your polos, foundationdisc.com. Thank you guys all so much for your support. I don't even know how to close this out. You close this out.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to do your call out.
Oh, yeah. What the heck? Hey, all you people on Twitter, there was someone that called me a mediocre disc golfer, which I then said, yes, I am a mediocre touring professional. I don't think I'm a mediocre disc golfer. I think also people have no idea what the word mediocre means. But hey, if you're watching this, I'll probably post a clip. Maybe I'll post this clip on Twitter because there's a lot of people that like to talk on Twitter, but they won't call in. The number's free. I guess there was some, people saying that they couldn't call in. They couldn't call in because they're international, right? So, okay. If all these Twitter people are international, that's fine, but call in. Let's have a discussion. Let's talk. What's going on? What's happening? Let's talk about it. Twitter, 140 characters, I think. Also, I got a 26 in my English ACT. It's not easy for me. I contradict myself constantly. I spell words wrong. Come on here. Talk to me face to audio. And we'll go that way.
There you go. We'll see you all next week.